Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
This is Culture Club HTX on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Lisa Holland Nelson and Shavana Robert Schreiber.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm Lisa Holland Nelson.
Hi.
Oh, what? Bowman Lombardi, fashionista in residence and co-host of Culture Club HTX, here with, you guessed it, here with
Shavana Robert Schreiber, the other half of Culture Club HTX.
And welcome to Coach Nelson's Corner. I am Coach Nelson, the greatest football coach who's never walked a sideline. But this week, I'm talking basketball. I'm talking Go Cougs, and I'm talking thank you for the greatest, season since 1984, basically.
Bye, Slamma Jamma.
We almost got there.
We don't want to make Magical sad. That's why we didn't talk about
it. Well, we don't want you to be sad. You've got to be glad for how great they've been and how great they played.
There's no second place trophy, lovely. I'm just saying.
They were so close.
But we're not talking.
Crying.
Well, everybody's crying.
I know.
It appears no one took a shot. There wasn't a missed shot. There appears to be.
It's like no fence.
Like paralysis. Like no fence happened. But anyway, we do want to shout out to our beloved Cougs and say we're with you no matter what. We were proud and loud, and we'll be watching next year, and you better do it.
Or we're like we unnamed your corner. Where can we unname the CJ's Corner?
We'll be not mentioning the Cougs. Speaking of football, Texas college sports, all sports, are entering this new era. This whole revenue sharing settlement is reshaping our athletic landscape, man.
What do you think?
$2.8 billion is a big chunk of change. Okay, settlement in the House versus the NCAA. Lawsuit. So it's transforming college athletics with Texas powerhouse programs leading different approaches
to
this new revenue sharing model.
I don't think people know this. So let's bottom line this.
Okay.
So we talk about Texas. So Texas powerhouse program, which there are a few. The settlement requires that major conference schools pay athletes 22% of their media rights plus ticket sales plus sponsorship revenue for approximately $20.5 million annually.
That's what they're splitting among the athletes, or each athlete's going to get that?
No, that's what they're splitting. Like, so it's 22, like all these sects of schools, so then the athletes, they'll divide it. I don't know how they're going to divide it out. We'll see. But I know that you have something to say about this. And, do you not? Because, I mean, this is the thing you've been talking about. Well, football will get the lion's share.
Well, yep. Yeah, but how do you figure out what's going to get? I mean, let's talk. Okay, so the settlement happened, but meanwhile, Texas programs, by the numbers, I mean, Texas reported $331.9 million in operating revenue for the fiscal year of 2024, while Texas Tech's football program is valued at $389 million compared to the University of Texas at $1.9 billion and A&M at $1
billion. So what's 22% that? Like, that's the point. So then, I just don't know if this, you know what? I am no financial guru. But what I do know is that, yes, impact for sure. So already local impact, there's going to be an $80 increase. There is an $80 increase in Texas football season tickets because I don't think the...
Because they've got to pay the athletes?
Yeah, because check this
$80
out.
$80 a ticket?
See what I mean? Because here's the thing. I don't think people understand that once you have a thing, many people, most people struggle to have it take it away, even if that means it's equitable for someone else. What does that mean? That means universities are not going to just say, okay, we're going to give you 22%. They're going to recoup that 22% from somewhere. And that's what's going to happen. Yeah. Everything's going to be more expensive.
But the big, it's not just the more expensive. The biggest deal is going to be where to play if you're an athlete, especially in Texas, because A&M made this Playfly deal that so there's a lot of NIL opportunities for the athletes, whereas Texas has their fully funded program. So you're definitely going to get XYZ. And then they're your U of H. And how are they going to play in this? You know, they're saying that they're going to give 68 to 69% of its revenue share to football.
Well, so that's one of the questions.
So then there's all the different sports. This isn't just football money.
So then here's the question. If you are a five-star recruit from Houston, would you choose to go to Texas for the fully funded program or A&M because you could potentially get more money through the name, image, likeness?
You know I can't answer that.
No, but that's the
nothing would make me go to A&M.
No, but that I think to your point. Yeah. about recruitment, that's going to start to be the decision.
Yeah.
And you know what? I am not saying no one misunderstand me. I am not saying that college athletes don't deserve some portion of, you know, if colleges are making so much money and that I get all of that, but I just don't think that the way it's I don't think it's very strategic. I don't think it's very thoughtful, and I don't think it's sustainable. And I think this happens all the time. We swing the pendulum back the other direction and just hope for the best. And I don't think there are many people who think about the long-term implications.
Well, it almost goes to the same thing. Not, and this is, trust me, this isn't political.
Oh, Lord.
But the concept of having to go offshore to manufacture in the United States because the cost of things in the United States got too big. So, you know, now we're trying to swing back and it's just nigh on to impossible. And, you know, blowing up the economies all over the world. So
it's the same sort of deal. Yeah. And then you think about, like, again, the implications on recruitment, the implications on alumni, the implication on endowment, the implication. So anyway, we'll see. And then other things that we'll have to see about. So the Texans apparently are going to get a new practice facility. Well, and I don't know what
they're thinking about it, you know, moving to the suburbs.
But why? What's wrong with the bubble?
I guess it's hot. I don't know.
Well, it's Texas. It's what old. Do you think?
It's old and they're in the stadium and they don't want to be in the stadium. It's old too. And the other teams have better facilities. So I guess recruitment could be better. Who knows? You know, I mean,
have you been in the bubble? The bubble is just fine. I mean, this is football, folks. This is not the spa. It's football. What do you mean?
Most NFL teams now have separate practice facilities, often with state-of-the-art amenities to attract and develop talent.
You know what? Well, you know what we talk
There's
a lot
no
about.
Timetable
you know what
this.
We talk a lot about? We talk about attracting things and developing things, but what about sustaining things?
How about winning?
We're not
talking enough about that. Like, you know, you go spend some more money, but how about winning?
No, but seriously.
We haven't gotten to the Super Bowl yet, have we?
But I think this is a bigger, magical, you're awfully quiet today. This is a bigger sports, in my opinion, issue. We are over-indexing on the developing and what about the sustainability? What about the franchise? You know
what
I mean?
Well, we know that. We've been talking about it. We talked about it with the Astros, with the players that had to go somewhere else for X million when they already have XXX millions. I mean, just ridiculous stuff. I don't think anybody's thought about sustainability.
Hello, that's what I'm
other
saying.
Other than you.
Yeah, you know, and that's sad because I shouldn't be those other people who know more about the issue should be thinking about it. So speaking of the Astros, so they're struggling with their reliever Montero. He went to the Braves, right?
And they had to pay him.
I know. So.
I know.
What does that mean? And he doesn't make a little bit of money. He makes $11.5 million, right?
Yeah.
So, what's the big picture?
Well, the big picture is don't jump. Supposedly, this guy had a great World Series, and they gave him these big contracts, and he never had a great anything again.
Sustainability. That's what I'm saying. We're all about building and development. Why is everybody so short-sighted? When did that happen? Did I fall asleep and wake up to short-sighted land? Seriously. Like, come on, folks.
Answer her.
I
have nothing to say.
Like, you know, like no, but you're right. Like, that's what happened. It's like, okay, you had one good whatever, and then we give you all this money, and then you go down the tubes. Like, no.
No, you have to have more than one good.
Right. So, you know.
Or somebody steals you for a whole bunch of money, too.
But then if they steal you, then they pay out your contract, right? But no. No,
well,
okay.
Well, we got rid of, well, you know, I.
You don't even know what.
I don't know. I mean, you know.
This is because this is a thing. I feel like this is a thing. Like I said, I don't think it's just, I mean, we've now talked about collegiate. We've talked about basketball. We've talked about football. And now we're at baseball. And similar themes of it's a lot of upfront investment to, like, attract the talent, get the new shiny thing. But then in order to sustain it, I don't know where that piece is
factoring
in. Well,
the interesting thing is also one of the topics here is ownership interference.
Oh, say more, lovely.
How about that? The
say
trade.
More.
This trade underscores the interim period between general managers when Jim Crane, you know, he had direct investment in player acquisitions as both Montero and Abreu contracts, $93 million combined, which I guess we got to pay. They were both signed between the managers, and honestly, the managers have got to build the team. I mean, I think as an owner, you can say, gee, I think this guy's great.
Mm-hmm.
But these giant contracts. And Jim Crane, you know, I think you're just the best owner in the world.
Yeah,
I
but
really
you know
do.
What? This is something
but
else.
But it's your money, too.
Yeah,
so
best
hey.
Owner. I mean, like but I think I do believe in just because you can do something doesn't mean you're the best person to do it. You know, for example.
Yeah.
And so I do think that a great leader, in my opinion, great leaders know the things they're great at and know the things that they may be good at, but there's someone else that's great at it. And so they don't try to do the things that they're good at. Great
yeah.
leaders only do the things they're great at.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that, and I don't care whether it's sports or business or whatever, that's something that I feel like is the distinction. Great leaders stay firmly in their lane and they let other greats emerge and develop other greats around them. And that's how you build dynasties, folks.
Well, and what the other side of it is, I'm questioning Crane's interference, but the financial implications are what I just said.
Mm-hmm.
The Astros are willing to eat contracts, and that shows both Crane's financial commitment to winning, because it's his money. I mean,
commitment to winning, or
and the challenges of maintaining a competitive roster under the MLB's luxury tax
system. Or the challenge of people saying I was wrong. That's also a challenge. So sometimes people lean in and commit.
So he seems to be able to say he's wrong.
I don't know.
He bought him out, you know.
Well, you know,
we got rid of him.
All right. Well, anyway, let's take a break and continue to deliberate this. But leadership, we always come back to leadership.
We always do.
Because it matters.
Our friend Rick Smith. Rick, we think about you constantly.
Lisa
you
definitely
such
thinks
a great
about you constantly. For reasons beyond leadership. But nevertheless.
That's not true.
Oh, God.
It's all about leadership,
yep.
isn't it?
We're going to a break now. We're off the rails. We'll be back.
Bye. Bye.
Do you love listening to Siobhana and me talk about all the things every Sunday here? Do you ever wish you could see what we're laughing about so much? Especially what Magical's laughing about? You're in luck. Subscribe to our YouTube channel and see the fun clips and outtakes from the show, as well as our super special series, Friends by the Fireplace, that we release every Friday. Finding us on YouTube is easy breezy. Type Culture Club HTX and voila, you're in.
You're listening to Culture Club HTX on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Lisa Holland Nelson and Siobhana Robert Schreiber.
And we're back. I'm Lisa Holland Nelson Bowman Lombardi, co-host of Culture Club HTX, here with my beautiful, blessed, brilliant, beloved bestie.
Okay.
All five.
Men,
who might you be?
Siobhana Robert Schreiber, the other half of Culture Club HTX, and here in our business segment.
With this incredible guest.
Yes.
We're so excited to have Kristen Florendo with us.
Yay.
Yay.
Welcome, Kristen. We're so happy that you're here. So, Lisa, you're the bio.
Kristen is a Houston-based content creator, entrepreneur, and co-founder of Illustrious Influence Media, a boutique social media agency. After pivoting from a career path in medicine, wow, this is a big pivot.
I know.
Kristen found her voice and her audience through high-impact user-generated content. She now works with major brands and mentors aspiring creators looking to monetize their content and grow in the digital space. Just tell me about this.
Okay,
let's just explain what I just described.
Well, so number one, thank you so much for being here. And number two, super interesting journey. And when we met, we actually met at an event at She Space.
Yes.
And when we started to talk and you started to tell me about your journey and I mentioned the show, I was like, okay, we have to have you on the show. Because as you explained it to me, I thought this is fascinating. So briefly walk us through your journey. How did you go from pursuing medicine to being a content creator?
Yes. Okay. So I am a Filipina American. I was born and raised here in Houston, Texas. And, you know, being in like an Asian culture, it's all about medicine. I grew up seeing medicine around me, like my mom, she's a registered nurse, my brother's a nurse practitioner, so that's all I knew. So I was like, okay, I'll pursue a career in medicine. And I was on the path to becoming a physician assistant. Mm-hmm. I went to college, I did all the prereqs and stuff like that. And actually during college, mm-hmm. I started posting content on social media just for fun because I always had that creative side in me. Like I always like to film, edit content. I love storytelling. So I started posting on social media, and I was not only doing my prereqs in college, I was also working as a medical assistant part-time. And then eventually I learned about UGC. So I was like, okay, cool. I can monetize off my content without needing such a big following. So I continued posting on social media while being in college and while working as a medical assistant. Uh-huh. And eventually some of my videos ended up going viral, specifically on TikTok. And that's when I had a lot of like my opportunities come in. Like I had brands reaching out to me, asking me to create UGC content for them. And I was like, okay, wow, this is for real. Like it was really eye-opening. And that made me realize that I can really pursue this as my career. So I ended up graduating college.
Where'd you go to school?
Oh, I went to the University of Houston.
There's another Coug.
Yay.
Magical's a Coug.
Go Cougs. So yeah, I went to University of Houston. I graduated and I continued working as a medical assistant because I was still unsure. But eventually, me being a content creator, it became full time because I was just getting more brand deals. I was getting more opportunities. And then I decided to just take a step back from pursuing medicine. And I decided to do this content full time. So I've been a full time UGC creator since, and also micro influencer. And I even opened and co-founded a social media marketing
agency. So how long
agency.
Have you been a content creator?
Yeah, so I've been a content creator for, I'd say, 3 years now. I started like taking this seriously early 2022, and then mm-hmm. I found out about UGC later that year. So I've been creating content since then.
So think
we need to take just a breath here and describe UGC
yes.
to people. What
yes.
is user-generated content?
So UGC is basically, it's different from influencing. I think people get confused with UGC and being an influencer. They kind of use it interchangeably. So UGC is when a brand works with a creator like me.
Directly.
Directly, yes. And with UGC, you don't need to have a big following, unlike an influencer. You know, when brands look for influencers, they're looking for someone with tens of thousands of followers or maybe even millions
Many
of
that
followers.
Are bought, but you know, let's not get into that.
Yep.
Keep going.
Yes, I've seen
that. I'm in the marketing age. I know.
Yeah. So with UGC, you don't need a big following. And brands typically use UGC if they really want to have content and creators that can make them content that feels authentic. Because, you know, with influencers, it can come off as very salesy, especially now. Like, people can see through things.
Mm-hmm.
So UGC, it's just very authentic. It gives an organic feel to the content and really builds trust and social proof.
So, for example, one of the things that you told me when we talked about this is, say I had a food delivery company. Mm-hmm. Now, I could go out and get J.J. Watt, let's say, for example, mm-hmm. to be my influencer. But J.J. Watt has a Coug. So the truth is, anyone who's watching that knows that J.J. Watt is not using my delivery service probably. Mm-hmm. But a normal person, or you, a mm-hmm. person who's generating content, that makes it more believable and, to yes. your point, social proof, more authentic. And so then if I'm consuming that content, I'm more likely to trust. So it's all these subtle things that people don't say on the nose. But it's mm-hmm. like, I trust this brand more because they're using real people
exactly.
versus a celebrity that I know they pay to do it that may not even be using their thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that on some level.
Yeah.
So you're saying that basically companies who are looking to get closer to the customer, we're just talking about this,
mm-hmm.
Are picking user-generated content over sort of traditional influencer marketing. That's been your experience.
Yes, basically, yeah. Because if you see JJ Watt promoting HelloFresh, you're going to be like, okay, yeah, I know he has a chef. I highly doubt he's using that. But if you use someone like me, like an everyday person or even other creators, it just gives more of that real feeling. Like it's not fake. It's more organic.
And social proof, as you mentioned. So can you talk about any of the brands that you work with? Or can you talk, if not brands specifically, can you talk about the industries or the genres, the space?
Yeah. So me personally, as a UGC creator, I don't like to limit myself to one niche. I've worked with a bunch of different industries, from fashion, beauty, skincare, health and wellness, even AI tech, and even a pet brand, like I was discussing with you at She Space. And some brands that I work with specifically was Sally Beauty, Madison Reed, and even Topicals, just to name a few.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I've worked with a variety, and I really love it that way too. I feel like I learn so much from working in different industries.
So talk about
what are you doing? I mean, like, where is your content appearing? Is it in print ads? Is it in, where is it? Social media? You know?
Yeah. So the UGC I create, most of the time the brands use it to post on their social media pages. And I've also had brands where they post it specifically for paid ads. Like I've had a brand do this thing called whitelisting where they use my content and they run ads on Instagram. So it appears as though I posted it, but I never really posted it. So my content appears in a variety of formats, more so just social media related.
But so a lot of time it's you saying this for the brand.
Yes.
Always, right? That's the whole idea of the user generated content. And what's interesting is I think it's so, you know, I have so many thoughts about the lack of authenticity in the world in general. But it's interesting because people, I knew this years ago. You go to a page and someone has 147,000 followers, but their engagement rate is tiny. Yeah. I know that those followers are bought. I know for a fact, right? And
for
so to your point about brands and just individuals being kind of hip to that, like, wait a minute, what people care more about, Tim Ferriss famously said this, you could grow a almost billion-dollar business with 100 dedicated raving fans. You don't need volumes and volumes and volumes of people. You need people who are actually going to buy the thing and tell people about it. Yeah. And I feel like as brands move to this user-generated content lane, it's the ones that kind of get that are starting to see, like, wait a minute. This, what's going to make the most sense? Because I paid the influencer $10,000 to do the thing, but I can't track that to an ROI. But I can, if I'm doing user-generated content, I can track it directly to an ROI because you have... Your engagement is probably higher than those that have more followers because you're a real person, if that makes sense. Okay, so from a business standpoint, since you've been doing this for 3 years, what advice would you give? If you have a business, because Lisa, I know we talk about this, businesses say, okay, I want to expand my brand and I am looking to either use an influencer, or that's probably what most people say because they're not as familiar with user-generated content. So what advice, Kristen, would you give a brand that is starting up for them to consider before they make the decision influencer versus UGC?
Yeah, so I'd say that if a brand wants to utilize an influencer's audience already, then go the influencer route. Because, you know, an influencer, they already have a community, they have a big following. So if a brand wants to specifically engage that specific audience, let me give an example. Do you both know who Nara Smith is? She's like a very big social media person.
I have no clue, but I know I'm not.
Yeah, so she's basically well known on TikTok.
For what?
Like,
oh, I don't even have a TikTok.
Creating things from scratch. So she
like food?
Nara Smith.
Like, yeah, food specifically, but the joke is she creates everything from scratch. So Marc Jacobs reached out to her and created a campaign where she created a bag from scratch. So they were utilizing her audience and the trend with her.
Or her brand. Her brand is from scratch. And so that matched with Marc
Jacobs.
Yeah,
her personal brand was like, oh yeah, I create everything from scratch. So Marc Jacobs was like, okay, I want to use that influencer. So that is when I feel like a brand should use an influencer. It's just, it's basically just if you want to use that influencer's community.
But I think that goes back to what you're saying about authenticity, because Marc Jacobs didn't reach out to her about doing something on AI, right? That would be, that's where the mismatch would come in. It's like she's already doing from scratch. So they were clever. It seems pretty clever. Now I'm going to go look it up. we are doing, obviously Marc Jacobs is not doing anything from scratch, but that's sort of a thing, like a mm-hmm. campaign that they're running, and they partner with someone who actually does things from scratch mm-hmm. for authenticity's sake. I actually think that's pretty smart.
Yeah.
Well, Marc Jacobs is a pretty smart brand, so I'm not that surprised.
For sure. And for UGC, I feel like brands should use UGC if they're really wanting to build up their own community. And mm-hmm. like I said, like social proof, because UGC is basically testimonials. And also if they want to build trust with their audience, because, mm-hmm. you know, if people see a brand using this influencer, that influencer, like it's so obvious that they're just paying them mm-hmm. to grow the audience, as mm-hmm. opposed to using different UGC creators that they've never seen before. It just appears more real and very intentional. And especially if brands focus on using UGC creators who look like the customer demographic they're mm-hmm. looking for, then it's like, okay, I can see this brand is being very intentional and they're not just doing this to
You know, one that I'll think of, and this is, and then any final questions, but one thing I think of is Chewy. So I'm a Chewy customer because I have, you know, a million dogs. Well, I don't, mm-hmm. but you know. And Chewy, like, I've never seen, like, a famous person on Chewy uses, like, regular people.
I mean, dogs.
And actual dogs.
Yeah, real dogs.
Yeah, like real people's pets, right? And so to the point that you made, they also do handwritten, whether it's handwritten or not, we don't know, but whatever.
I've seen that.
Like it just feels so real. And I, if some other pet shipping company popped up, I wouldn't use them. I'd probably be like, nope, I'll pay Chewy $3 more because their service is top notch mm-hmm. and it feels real. Like they are dog owners doing what dog or pet owners doing what other pet owners
I
want
think
and need.
Chewy should hire you as a UGC.
See?
They should.
Except for I'm not making it. I'm not posting anything.
Well,
I'm like, I'll UGC.
Start.
I'll do a UGC, but you have to do all the stuff. KK, you'll have to be my person creating this stuff.
I can't. Oh,
so see, KK's puppy Milo was a UGC creator. He's really? So cute too. He shares my birthday. Okay, anyway, lovely. Any final questions?
No, I mean I think this is exciting. I'm curious. I'm curious about the monetization of UGC creators. Is it better than influencer?
I definitely feel like influencers have more leverage when it comes to getting paid. Like if you have a following of like 1 million and your engagement is great, then brands are willing to drop like 40,000. Like even big YouTubers, I'm sure big brands are able to pay you like 100,000. But UGC, there's definitely a lot of money to be made there too. Like okay. With UGC, there's like a base rate that you have. And then every time a brand wants to add something, like, for example, if they want to use it for paid ads, if they want to do whitelisting or spark ads on TikTok, it's just add on. If they want raw footage, add on. So you can make thousands of dollars from UGC as well. And brands are really willing to pay for that okay. because they have to pay anyways. Like if they're running ads with your content, it's going to be extra.
Okay. Yeah, and I think as far as that goes, I think the difference is I read a really interesting article actually in The Economist about this. The influencers who have the hundreds of thousands of an audience and high engagement is very small, mm-hmm. and that's already saturated. Yeah. Like that's the truth. Everyone else is sort of late to the game, and they're trying to be those influencers, but it's like either mm-hmm. you do or you don't, and it takes a lot of time to build up to that, and people are trying to fabricate it. So I think mm-hmm. UGC will see more brands moving to it because it's cheaper on the whole for the brand.
It's more accessible and more scalable.
It's more accessible, more scalable, and more authentic. And I think the influencer bubble, I think, is about to pop, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you heard it here first, folks, on Culture Club HGX. And with that, we'll be back.
Bye.
I'm Siobhana Roberts-Schreiber, co-host of Culture Club HTX, here to talk to you about my other gig, CEO of SNR Creative Advisory. At SNR Creative, we're an elite team of seasoned professionals with one simple mission, partnering with our clients to creatively solve problems. Whether it's help with your business development, updating your communication strategy, or navigating a shift related to business transformation, our team of experts are here to help you think through that transition and execute it seamlessly. To learn more, visit snr-creative.com.
You're listening to Culture Club HTX on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Lisa Holland-Nelson and Siobhana Robert-Schreiber.
And we're back. I'm Lisa Holland Nelson Bowman Lombardi, co-host of Culture Club HTX, and also fashionista. I left that out.
Resident fashionista. Resident, that's right.
Fashionista, and I'm here today with my precious, my best, beloved, brilliant
Shivana Roberts-Reiber, the other half of Culture Club HTX. But more importantly, we're here today with an incredible guest in our community segment. Who are we here with? Who are you, guest?
The one who thought she was the bestie and beloved.
See?
I guess I'm just Kay Smith Blunt.
Oh, so we had a whole conversation about Henry Richardson. We love you, Henry.
And we
how
do.
She was like, oh, he's, I was like, wait a minute. So I feel you.
Yes.
So, Kay, we're so excited to have you here.
You know it.
Thank you. I'm excited.
So, Lisa, you have to do the bio because that's your thing. So
I'm doing the bio, mm-hmm. right? Well, first of all, because I have to correct it.
Yeah.
Kay Smith Blum is a Seattle-based author, former fashion executive, whose debut novel, Tangles, was named the 2024 Book of the Year by the Library Global Book Awards, inspired by a real Cold War era events and recent environmental crises. My goodness. Tangles blends historical truth with riveting fiction to uncover the human cost of secrecy and silence. And so, Kay, here you go. Your debut. Welcome. First of all, welcome.
Thank you.
I was like,
Kay and I have been friends for a few decades, and we'll never mention how many. But we met as buyers at Neiman Marcus, and now we're both in our fourth or fifth or, for me, ninth iteration of whatever we are. Anyway, your debut novel, Tangles, is rooted in real Cold War history and modern environmental headlines. What made you feel this story needed to be told?
About 2.5 years ago, I was querying my second manuscript and getting rejections left and right.
So what does querying a manuscript mean for people who don't know?
So that is a soul-sucking process mm-hmm. where an author puts her heart and sleeve on a page in less than 250 words and pitches literary agents uh-huh. on taking them on to help
write
get
the
them
book.
A publisher, mm-hmm. right? And you have to understand how littered the landscape is. An agent told me that maybe 5 years ago, mm-hmm. before COVID, they got, you know, somewhere between 200 and 300 queries a month.
Wow, that's
during
a lot.
COVID, most of the agencies got anywhere from 3,000 to 5,000 queries because everybody decided to write the novel.
Got it.
That they hadn't written.
Okay, so you were doing that, and then what happened?
So I was doing that, and the Seattle Times ran – the headline story in the Seattle Times one morning was about the waste tanks at Hanford Nuclear Reserve, mm-hmm. which was built during the Cold War mm-hmm. and are full of 56 million gallons of nuclear waste, right? Mm-hmm. So –
Today,
and these waste tanks were beginning to leak perilously close to the Columbia River. And if the Columbia River Basin goes, the entire region goes.
Right.
I'm not just talking eastern Washington. Mm-hmm. I'm talking Idaho,
Oregon,
Montana. So I'd known about the Hanford nuclear plant because I'd run for a school board when Jerry Pollitt, a state legislator, was running for his first term mm-hmm. of office, and he had coordinated the advocacy group that put protocols around the cleanup at the Hanford Nuclear Reserve, which is the largest environmental disaster site, 3 Superfund sites in the United States, mm-hmm. right? So there were at various campaign forums, he was like educating me, and I knew there were some real serious issues around
sure.
how to do the cleanup. It was complicated, and I knew that somehow this headline was meaningful because I kept running into people who were from the Tri-Cities,
mm-hmm.
and I thought, okay, the universe is trying to tell me something.
Right.
And then I had this dream with a mass of red hair on the water, and I woke up and I thought, wait. That hair wasn't wet, and that has something to do with this story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I started writing.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay, so it's historical fiction, and that obviously requires you have to balance fact. I mean, it's historical, right? So, well, mm-hmm. we hope. We hope that it's fact. I mean, yours is. I'm saying in general, in the mass, right? We hope so. And imagination. So how did you navigate that? Because obviously it was very well researched, and you had to make sure that it's a story, but there are also these very true elements that You have to disclose right. and tell. So
exactly.
How did you do that?
Well, I think there is an expectation from the reader when they pick up a book that's of a different era, mm-hmm. that what they read in the book is actually true
yes.
about that era, mm-hmm. right? And mine were fictional characters, but they developed in my head while I listened to dozens of oral testimony from mm-hmm. folks who actually worked at Hanford oh. during World War II and after, mm-hmm. during the roll-up of the nuclear weapons arsenal because of, obviously,
right.
the arms race during the Cold War, right? So as I'm listening to all these different oral testimonies, voices started appearing in my heads and characters started forming. And then I did a plotting course with a brilliant young adult author, Jean-Claude Bemis, and I plotted what I thought would make a great story about the Cold War years at Hanford.
Mm-hmm.
But because I was just using like everyday men and women as the characters, I wasn't beholden to some quote that some general that everybody would
right.
know the general's
right.
name, that I had to get that right.
Sure, sure.
But I did feel beholden to the events that actually occurred.
Yes.
So everything in the storyline is that incident or an event of that type
yes.
occurred typically in the same month
yes.
of the year that is in the story.
Well, wow. you know what I take away from that? If you're ever giving an oral testimony, do not lie, because someone may listen to that and write a book. And if you right. lie, then the book won't be factual.
And
exactly.
We all know we don't lie anyway.
No, I well, know. Oh, well you know, we hope people,
we know.
Lie,
we
people
get,
do.
Well, we know we get in trouble when we lie, but meanwhile... Kay was once really immersed in fashion
yes.
and education leadership as well, two very different worlds. How did your past careers shape your voice as a writer, as
well,
a novelist?
Well, you know how creative we fashionistas are. I mean, there was never a moment where I wasn't having to come up with, okay, what's the line we want to put in that advertisement?
Right.
What is the line we want to put in the newsletter that's going, what's the cute line I can put on the Instagram post or
right,
the Facebook
right.
page,
it's
right?
True.
That'll draw clients to us. So when somebody said you've got to come up with a tagline for your book, that was like a piece of cake.
So you were buyers and you were writing copy. You were having to write copy as well.
Right.
For ads, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was
ads.
Part of the presentation
yeah.
when you were pitching
yeah.
something for an ad. You had to say something clever.
Yeah. And we were small business owners. Yeah. So
right.
I was
that's what
in
I mean,
charge
but
of all the advertising,
yeah. yes.
all of the direct
yeah.
mail, et cetera. So I was always writing as a
yeah.
as a fashionista. And then when I was on the school board.
Yeah, even more so.
The
probably.
One thing that I really learned on the school board, it really deepened my understanding of how to get to the heart of mm-hmm. an issue, is that you got to listen to all sides, not just from the community, but
yes.
from the experts, right?
Yes.
And so writing is like that.
You mm-hmm.
that 9 months of research, you're exploring every single thing that could have possibly happened during that time period and what multiple people thought about that event
yes.
or that incident.
Mm-hmm.
And then that really helps you get to the heart of the story.
Yeah.
So with Luke and Mary as my vehicles, they're
yes.
my two protagonists in a dual narrative, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with them as my vehicles, I use a lot of snappy dialogue to
yes.
inform the readers about what was going on then. But I also... you know, tried to keep it a very human story. So
I think you succeeded.
Whenever they're inside their heads,
yeah.
you're feeling what they're feeling.
I think you succeeded in that for sure. So final question. Well, I say that, but then Love is going to think of one more. But final question we've prepared is, obviously there's writing the novel, but then there's launching the novel and actually getting people to buy it. So what's something that people don't realize about the business of publishing, other than what you shared around the volume of queries that these literary agents are getting, but something you learned as a first-time author to build your visibility that you would like to share with others that are thinking of doing the same thing?
So if you're out there and you're writing a book, I think it's really important for you to understand how littered the landscape is.
Mm-hmm.
The literary landscape.
Look at that alliteration. Mm-hmm. We do.
I know. A littered literary landscape.
I know.
And in 2009, that's not that long ago, Amazon maybe had 250,000 books for sale on their website.
Mm-hmm.
In 2023, they had 2.5 million. Whew. So to rise above that fray, you really have to write a good story. Mm-hmm. And you don't just tell a good story. It mm-hmm. has to be well crafted. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what I relearned, mm-hmm. in addition to what I think of crafting a good mm-hmm. tale, I relearned that the first principle of retail, which is selling books, is getting personal, getting mm-hmm. in front of your readers, mm-hmm. because the mm-hmm. level of engagement mm-hmm. is critical to a book like becoming the buzzy book,
yes.
becoming viral. And just huh. yesterday when I was at Barnes & Noble mm-hmm. selling books, yeah. It was so rewarding because I had two or three people come in that I knew through friends of friends, and they said, oh my gosh, I bought your book, I read your book, and my book club read it last month, and they loved it too. And this is stuff I didn't even know was happening.
That's fantastic. And that's how it goes. I shared it with my book club. Someone from the book club came. Others didn't come, but they're reading the books. My friend in Atlanta, I told you, sent me a note. Was like, hey, I'm reading the book. She didn't even live here. But she follows Culture Club HX, and she knew that you were here. She's like, it's on my list.
Yay.
I'm reading the book. So,
yay.
So it's get in front of your audience, get close to. That's the same line in fashion, right?
Yes,
the same. You need to
exactly.
get close to the customer, yes, the actual customer. Yeah. What do you say? No one ever bought shareholder value, Lovely.
That's
what you say?
Well, my theory is.
Yeah. Yes. No, but that.
No
that,
one ever bought shareholder
value. Okay, final question, Lovely. It's for you.
What's next?
Well, hopefully being able to visit again with you two discerning tastemakers in the not-too-distant future. But I'm writing another book, and I think it's going to be a good one. And I'm just, you know, going down that path of debunking all those 20th century tropes. So stay tuned.
Thank you.
We're going to stay tuned. But also, what about the movies?
What about the movies? But also, how do people find you? If people want to go, yeah.
So I have a website. What a surprise.
And a newsletter.
Well, the newsletter will never come. But if you go to my website, you can
sign up for the newsletter.
And yeah. please do. Yeah.
Well, what's your website?
Oh, ksmith-blum.com.
Perfect.
And the book is?
Tangle.
You're going to remember that. Awesome. Well, this has been terrific. Thank you so much. You have been such a fun guest. It's been fun with you all week. So
we've had you all week.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a super successful, author signing party,
yes.
and then you had a more successful sellout at Barnes & Noble.
She sold out, people.
And here we are, you know, so.
Rounding out the week on Culture Club
HX. And I left a few signed copies at Blue Willow Bookshop.
Oh, yes.
Excellent.
So absolutely swing on down to Blue Willow because they have just a few copies left and most of them are signed by me.
Excellent.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much.
Thank
and with
you.
That, we'll be back.
Bye.
Bye. Are you a business owner and looking for a fun and low-cost way to advertise? Yes? Super! You should join our Culture Club HTX crew. Visit us at cultureclubhtx.com and click on Culture Club HTX crew or send us an email at connect@cultureclubhtx. You'll be happy you did.
This is Culture Club HTX on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Lisa Holland-Nelson and Shavana Robert-Schreiber.
And we're back. I'm Lisa Holland-Nelson Bowman Lombardi, the
resident fashionista
mm-hmm. here at Culture Club HTX with my beloved, brilliant, best, brightest. No, that's not.
That's
one,
I'll
I
take
just
that.
Made it up.
I'll take it.
Anyway, whoever.
Shavana Robert-Schreiber, the other half of Culture Club HTX, and we're in your favorite food group, Lovely.
It
fashion.
Is fashion, and it's time for fashion. And I think this is a hilariously mm-hmm. funny story that's really as much about team building as fashion. But there's mm-hmm. a camo croc craze. I mean, whoever heard of camo crocs? How Hayden Wesneski's shower shoes started an Astros fashion phenomenon. This guy, you know, this pitcher, this young guy that we're so excited to have on our team, kept losing his flip-flops that he used for the showers, I guess, in the shower rooms and all the baseball stadiums, but especially at home here at the juice box. So anyway, so he decides to get these camo croc shoes. And his teammates think they're so cool, they're starting to get them too.
You know what I see? Lack of focus. You know what I think is cool? Championships and rings and
She's
winning.
She's been over here before we started this segment.
Because I do. I'm
this
like.
Has nothing to do with winning.
Yeah, I know. right? I'm like, the hell with your Crocs. Let's win, baby. Anyway, so I get the team building. I get all that. And it's even better when you have a ring. So maybe this will be the thing that'll drive us to the World Series. Maybe.
But camaraderie.
Yeah, camaraderie. See, Magical gets it.
As I just give him, shoot him a look. Like
do we think fans are going to show up?
Oh, yeah, because fans are ridiculous. Of course they are.
Sporting camouflage Crocs.
You know what fans aren't doing? Winning the World Series. So, of course they are.
No, neither is our team. No,
right now. Well, hello. They're one and the same now. No, okay. I know. Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on to LeBron. What is he doing?
This is pretty cool. LeBron James is making history again as the first Ken Ambassador for Barbie. There's a LeBron James Ken doll, you know, coming out. And the coolest thing, I think, they made it like an inch taller than any other Ken doll.
Well,
I don't know
sense,
if you know
actually.
This. I think.
That makes
I mean,
sense.
I think this is great. Basketball legend LeBron James has added another milestone to his storied career as Mattel unveils him as the inaugural figure in their new Kenbassadors series. The collaboration between the Los Angeles Lakers star and Barbie celebrates male role models who inspire and contribute to a better world for all, which we know.
Do you know how much
this
doll
is
costs?
Such a good guy. Do you know how much is the doll?
$75.
How much? Wasn't a Barbie like $9.99?
$75. If you are interested in buying this Barbie, you can do it on April 14th. And it's going to be available at Target, Walmart, Amazon, and Mattel Creation. And it costs $75. If you ever hear me come in here and say I spent $75.
On a Barbie?
Push me out of that window.
Really?
What
you
the
might
hell?
Buy it.
No. You could buy it. Because you have granddaughters, so you can
Well,
buy
listen
it.
To the this thing. This The meticulously designed doll features numerous personal details.
It's AI.
Including a varsity jacket with just a kid from Akron. Did you know that? On the back. And an I Promise wristband honoring his school. Uh-huh. And a We Are Family shirt representing his foundation. This
You know what would make me okay with
is
this?
Is money going to the foundation
there,
from
there
this doll?
There we go. No, I don't
foundation
know.
Foundation connection. The collaboration highlights LeBron James Family Foundation, its community work, and particularly the I Promise.
It highlights
school.
It, but I don't see a revenue share. Now, if there were a revenue share, I would feel better about
I am
all this.
Betting his money from it's going to the foundation. What do you think?
I don't know.
Hey,
what
LeBron, would
at?
You let us know that?
Yeah, can you call us?
Yeah.
No, because that, no, I
am
get
betting.
Behind that. I was thinking, you know what, if this were... Then proceeds from, not just from LeBron's part, but from all the retailers were going towards some educational or what medical thing. I'd be like, you know what? I can go buy $75. I can get behind that. But just for, I can't say that word, but for giggles and you know what else? No, I'm not interested in it. Okay.
Well, okay, let me just ask you this.
What?
If you were to buy a Kenbassador doll, which Houston sports icons would make them a meaningful addition to them?
Magical, you need a mic. I think she's talking to you.
No, I'm asking you. JJ. Wait. We'd have a JJ
yeah,
doll.
Yeah, yeah, we'd have a JJ. We yeah. could have a JJ. We'd have a Rick Smith.
We could have a Rick Smith doll.
We could have a JJ.
Our team is going to have a Rick Smith. Even our even our team, just FYI, okay. at ESPN Sports, the sales team. At ESPN
oh,
Sports
yeah.
Radio is impressed
they said
that
it was
we had
a
Rick Smith.
Feather in our cap.
Yes.
I have feathers all around.
You have feathers on today.
Always.
Yeah.
It's always
yeah.
an imaginary feather, always.
So, Rick, you're coming back.
We'll get a Rick Smith doll. We'll
He said he'd come back.
He so. Did. We'll create a Rick Smith doll.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so, oh my God. The other fashion story that we must talk about because it's super important is you said that Neiman's, the storied, you know, historic Neiman's in Dallas isn't closing.
No, it's not.
So what happened?
Well, it got a stay of execution, I think, for at least 6 months
Texas.
Because the public in Dallas just protested and, you know, just made all kinds of fuss about them closing the downtown store at Main and Irving. Meanwhile, the same public probably hasn't walked in the door in God knows how long, which is why they were closing it.
In the first
so let's
place.
Hope. They're coming back in the store, which would be great. Great.
You know
for
what? Meanwhile, that same public hasn't protested our energy grid. But you know what? That's not what we talk about on Culture Club HTX. Yeah.
They haven't protested our energy grid?
No. I mean, like the
You're
people.
You're kidding. Seriously? Oh, God, no. How could we not have protested? No, I thought the world protested our energy.
No, but the people were outraged. You know, you think if the same vigor was applied to things like our energy grid, then, you know, we would be in a different state. But we're here in the great state of Texas on Culture Club HTX, and we're at the end of our show because magical is like, stop before you get in trouble. And the FCC, maybe they don't exist anymore. Maybe the FCC doesn't even exist anymore. Maybe we don't have anything to worry about. We're really going to go now. All right, lovely. What do we want people to do?
It rarely happens that she's the one going off the rails.
This has been a week
of news. That's why we're laughing.
Have you seen the news?
You have been
this week?
So up and down. A week of news or moods?
News.
Which thing?
News.
It has been a week
because
of news. Yeah. Oh, and one other big thing. This is my last chance to remind you all that the Tickle Pink Luncheon is next Thursday, April 17th at the Post Oak Hotel.
This is fashion. This is
Is so fast. It is the most fashionable luncheon of the year.
So.
Everybody will be there in pink. I think there's some seats left. You can go to the Tickle Pink Luncheon.
Lisa will put you. Lisa
the Tickle
will
Pink
seat
Luncheon.org is the website, I think.
And if there are no seats, email Lisa.
And
she
guess who's going to be there?
Who?
Oh, gee.
Our Rick Ken Bassiter.
Our Ken Bassiter, Rick Smith, will be there getting honored.
We got to go. Magical, I'm sorry. All right. And with that,
there you have it.
We want you to
stay focused,
stay fit,
and stay fabulous.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm Lisa Holland Nelson, Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer of Astounds, and we invite you to dive into the dynamic world of digital marketing services with us. Astounds is not just an internet marketing service provider. We're your gateway to the future of online marketing. With our innovative approaches ranging from great website design to impactful online advertising and social media, we'll equip your business with the tools to grow. We want the opportunity to astound you. Grow your business online with us at astounds.com.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.